Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
How far can a federal judge go in slamming the brakes on the agenda of an American president?
Does a federal court have the power to hold accountable the federal government if that government acts unlawfully, and in this case, tramples core constitutional rights?
Medi-Cal coverage of weight loss drugs on the chopping block.
Our state will end up paying more to treat the complications of obesity when we could have prevented that with coverage of this medication from the start. It is the true definition of preventative care.
Almost 20,000 USC Trojans are graduating tonight. We hear one of their stories.
Not only did I get my bachelor's degree, I'm also the first one in my family to get a master's degree.
She's awesome. Stay tuned for the end of the show for that one. Welcome to the LA Local for Thursday, May 15th, 2025. It's brought to you by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. I'm your host, Jonathan Service, who can depressingly say that he graduated college in the last century. Ugh. Coming up on today's LA Local, Medi-Cal is one of the first big government healthcare plans to cover weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. And now, thanks to a crippling budget deficit, that coverage could be ripped away. What is SALT? Why is it holding up a huge Republican tax bill in Congress? And why does that matter to us here in California? And one Trojan story of overcoming the odds to become a college graduate. But we start at the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice has heard arguments this morning over President Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship for children born in the United States to illegal immigrant parents. But at the heart of the case, at least in this first round of arguments, is actually a debate over the power of lower district court judges to issue national injunctions. Those injunctions have been responsible for grinding several Trump policies to a halt as court fights play out. Greg Chen, director of government relations for the American Immigration Lawyers Association, told me the core question here in this morning's arguments.
A question here today that the court was really grappling with is that the president and his lawyers are frustrated that already three federal courts across the country have ruled against him and said, this is unlawful what you are doing. This goes against longstanding 14th Amendment and Supreme Court law. And so it's frustrating that's happening. And so it's bringing this challenge to the court and saying, court, you need to stop these federal judges' rulings and undo them. And the underlying question that's being flagged here, that's a technical legal issue, is does a federal court have the power to hold accountable the federal government if that government acts unlawfully, and in this case, tramples core constitutional rights. And the federal government, the Trump administration, is saying, no, these injunctions are district court judges acting with too much power.
Chen says that while this was largely a procedural question, Supreme Court justices didn't seem inclined to allow President Trump to change birthright citizenship on his own.
Even though the court was not primarily focused on the core constitutional right of birthright citizenship, several justices seemed to think and indicate that birthright citizenship is a right that must be upheld and that it is enshrined in the Constitution. Certainly the liberal justices, Justices Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson, explicitly said so. But even some of the other justices, perhaps the ones more in the middle, Amy Coney Barrett, for example, perhaps the Chief Justice, were grappling with this question about what is going to happen with the fundamental constitutional right and seemed to want to be able to figure out what is a way that the court can establish uniform rules on these kinds of deep, important questions instead of allowing for the kind of chaos that would happen if there was no nationwide injunction and suddenly you had certain states where somebody who's born in the United States has their citizenship and other states that don't have that.
For now, the Trump birthright citizenship executive order remains blocked throughout the country while justices consider the case. The court might not issue a decision until late June or early July. Stay tuned. Why is SALT holding up a deal on a massive package of spending and tax cuts from the Republicans in Congress. And we're not talking about the salt you have on your kitchen table. SALT in this case stands for State and Local Tax Deduction. And it's an important tool for people living in high income tax states like California. A fight between red state and blue state Republicans over the deduction is now threatening to tank President Trump's, and I'm quoting here, big, beautiful bill. We called up USC tax professor Edward McCaffrey to get an explanation of how the deduction works.
It's an acronym for state and local taxes. And what it refers to in this context is the deduction, now limited, but the deduction on the federal tax, when you fill out your 1040 and your federal tax, historically, you were able to subtract the state and local taxes you were paying. There's good reason for that. Why are you paying taxes on taxes? Why are you paying federal taxes on money that you're remitting to Sacramento or Los Angeles, as the case may be?
SALT deductions come into play primarily for people living in states like California, New York, New Jersey. McCaffrey tells me, here's where politics come into play.
The states you mentioned and all of the ones we could dig up are quote unquote blue states, partly because those blue states tend to have state level income taxes, which generate large pots of money from at least the higher income. So those are the states with income taxes. Texas, Florida, Nevada do not have state level income taxes. And partly because that's where, you know, kind of upper professionals live. To get one point in relatively quickly, this is now only an issue to those people who itemize their deductions, fill out what we call a Schedule A, list their particular deductions. And that's an increasingly small minority of Americans.
If you remember, the SALT deduction was capped at $10,000 during the first Trump administration. And it was a particular message to blue states.
Ultimately, it gets enacted in Trump's first administration as a clear middle finger to blue states. Basically, it was a tax. The limitation on the SALT deduction was a tax increase on Democrats, Democratic states. So Trump and the Republicans were happy to do it. Now, as the worm turns, so to speak, and we look at the same situation in Trump 2, we now see that part of the reason, a major part of the reason the Republicans have power and have the majority in the House is because Republicans, really, once the SALT deduction got limited, Republicans have risen to power in part because of the seats that they've been able to pick off in California and New York and some other blue states. So now you have these Republicans in states that are being hurt by the SALT limitation.
As it currently stands, Republican leadership in the House is offering to triple the SALT deductions from that $10,000 cap up to $30,000. But for blue state Republican members, that likely won't be enough to get their support for Trump's, and I quote, big, beautiful, close quote, tax bill. Negotiations between Republicans continue. See where they end up next week. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, take care of some business. And when we return, weight loss drugs on the chopping block for Medi-Cal patients, and it's graduation night for USC. This is the LA Local. Be right back.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Thanks for sticking with us on the LA Local for Thursday. I'm your host, Jonathan Service. Big change could be coming for California's healthcare program for lower income residents. When it comes to coverage of revolutionary weight loss drugs, Medi-Cal could soon be cutting coverage of drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy as part of the effort to close the state's estimated $12 billion budget deficit. The thinking is that scaling back coverage of those weight loss drugs could save Medi-Cal about $700 million within about 4 years. Dr. Wayne Ho, who is a clinical obesity researcher, tells KNX News that this move will be devastating for many of his patients who won't be able to afford these medications, which can cost upwards of $1,000 per month.
Medi-Cal was one of the first insurers, I should say, to actually cover the most effective class of medications for chronic weight management, which are our GLP class. And it was remarkable because those are the patients who are the most in need of this drug who have the least access. A lot of these patients don't have the financial resources for healthy living, for eating more nutritious foods. They live in food deserts. They don't have access to obesity specialists. And so having that coverage was so helpful for me and my patients.
For Dr. Ho, those cost savings are not worth what he argues will be a dramatic rise in health risks for overweight Californians.
Most of them will go without. I think that is just the reality is it is not a medication that you need to sustain life, but the longer term implications for health are very important. With these medications, not only do they treat weight and obesity, but we know that it leads to 20% decrease in heart attack and stroke for people without diabetes. And with diabetes, it's even greater. We know that it can slow down progression of chronic kidney disease and chronic liver disease. We know that it may improve some autoimmune conditions, as well as decrease your risk of 13 different types of cancer. So we may not see the implications right away, but for longer term, we will. Our state will end up paying more to treat the complications of obesity when we could have prevented that with coverage of this medication from the start. It is the true definition of preventative care.
He explained that unfortunately, most people who stop using Ozempic and Wegovy will gain weight back and will have to deal with added on health complications.
There is a trend towards weight regain. Obesity is a chronic disease, so it doesn't surprise us that without treatment, it may return back to its original condition. It's an average. So some people may be able to maintain their weight loss. Everyone will gain some weight back. Some will be within 5%, 10%. Others may regain the entire weight back within the period of a year or more. So it's highly variable in that sense. But it's the same analogy for someone with high blood pressure. If you treat their blood pressure and you get them to a normal range and you take away their medication, it's no shock for most people that blood pressure will go back up. And the same is true for obesity. Again, it is a chronic condition. It is a disorder of metabolism and for hormones.
As proposed in Governor Newsom's May budget revise, coverage of the drugs would end on January 1st, 2026. Finally today, I love graduation season. Parents are beaming with pride, students relieved to be finishing off their studies, excited for the next chapters of their lives. I can be about as bitter and jaded as they get, I promise you, and yet it's impossible not to be filled with a sense of accomplishment and hope around this time of the year. USC's main commencement ceremony is tonight at the Coliseum. It's about 20,000, give or take, Trojans taking part, getting their diplomas. Among them is Ashley Espinoza, who's earning both her undergrad and master's degree in urban planning at the same time. I had the absolute pleasure of talking with Ashley. We started at the end of her academic career and worked backwards. What's your plans after this?
So I would love to work on LA 2028 plan. So the Olympics are coming and obviously, you know, the city is so excited for it. But I think I really want to be able to be part of these transportation plans to not only make transportation more accessible for people, but make sure that although we are considering all the tourists coming in, but making sure that we're still considering Angelenos. So I since I'm really into public transportation and I know how public transportation can improve the quality of life of individuals, just being part of that plan of making LA a little bit better.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. I hope you land that job. Both your parents are from the Dominican Republic originally?
Both of my parents are from the Dominican Republic.
From the Dominican.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Are you the first one in your family to graduate from an American university?
Yes.
That's amazing. How does that feel? And how immensely proud are your parents?
They're so proud. I think growing up, my parents really tried to ingrain in me that education should be my main priority. And they allowed me to do that. It was my only job growing up, you know. And when I got accepted into my dream school, they were so happy for me, even though that meant me moving all the way across the nation. But not only did I get my bachelor's degree, I'm also the first one in my family to get a master's degree. And I like they flew in, you know, they did the 6-hour flight. They're with me today. And they're just so excited to celebrate my accomplishments.
And so you started coming out of COVID years, right? That had to be an interesting complication, kind of right at the start.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I was part of the graduating class of 2020. So that was like peak COVID when everything kind of just went down. So first year, like my last year of high school was during COVID, and then my first year of college was completely during COVID. So essentially with USC, campus wasn't open. So I kind of did lose my first year of just being a regular college student, but you know, it gave me the opportunity to start college at home with my family, with the support system that I already have during like these tough times that was happening just, you know, across the globe. But then once we were able to go on campus, like from my sophomore year, USC, you know, they tried their best with like with the situation that was given. And I at first I was really concerned of finding my community, especially since I'm not from LA. You know, I'm used to New York, I'm used to my trains, I'm used to just being able to walk places. But when I came to LA, being at USC, USC made it a big priority to create these connections or like these events that we could connect with our peers. Since, you know, we kind of went through a tough time, just like worldwide, where it's like people really couldn't connect with each other. So they tried to put as many events as they could responsibly. And, you know, I was able to find my community. And what I'm really proud of, like I started off the same friends I started off with, I was able to end with.
Well, I hope that you get that job and then go on to become eventually CEO of LA's Metro System, because we could use your innovation and your positivity.
Thank
I
you. Thank you.
I'm rooting for you. Remember that name, Ashley Espinoza. When LA Subway and Light Rail System finally realizes its full potential by, let's say, like 2050, it's going to be because of people like Ashley. This has been your LA Local for Thursday, May 15th. It's sponsored by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. You can see the inventory for all 12 dealerships at lacarguy.com. We're going dark tomorrow while I get my creaky old man back checked out. Remember, I mentioned I graduated in the last century. So let me wish everyone a fantastic weekend now. Be safe. Enjoy. See y'all on Monday.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.